Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. As we slide into the holiday season, the end of the year rapidly approaching, perhaps not rapidly enough for some, we present year-end tax tips for your income tax returns for 2021. Has much changed over the last year? Are there major changes brought on by the pandemic? What do I want to be doing between now and year's end? Tonight on Your Legal Rights, as the year comes to a close, we give you tax tips. What do we know about possible changes brought on by the Build Back Better Act? What tax law changes do we know of, whether now in effect or coming down the road, such as increasing the SALT limit? Should we all go out and buy bigger houses? Should we cash in on what we got? For that matter, what of a corporation? What do the managers and executive want to be doing between now and year's end? In what areas should they be focused? And as always, we're eager to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134 if you're in the Bay Area. If you're not, if you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. There's much to discuss, and we've assembled just the right folks with whom to do it. As always, you can call regarding any questions on tonight's topic, taxes, and what you could still do as this year comes to a close. You're not limited to the exact point we are in our conversation. And bear in mind that just as a physician guest won't diagnose your family member based on a phone call, our attorney guest can't provide you precise legal advice as they lack all the facts related to a given case. However, we're happy to pass along those legal principles that would assist you in your decision-making. And while their legal guidance mightn't be the position of their employers or clients, our attorney guests, they're here to help. Without further ado, let me jump right over to our guests as tonight we have a spectacular group. To help us through this overview, Frank Adam of Pacifica, a great supporter of both Your Legal Rights and our Call a Lawyer Night feature, is an attorney, a real estate broker, and a certified public accountant. And with offices in San Rafael, David Hellman is a certified specialist in both tax law as well as estate planning, trust, and probate law. Certified as a specialist by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, as well as a certified public accountant and a longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights. And David, Frank, welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening, and thank you.
You know, last year at this time, I commented that it seems like a lot's changed with the pandemic. And we spoke of such things as the Paycheck Protection Program loans and the economic payments under the CARES Act. What about these? What about these things that changed since last year?
Well, the Paycheck Protection Program loans are fully subscribed, so there's no more funding for that. Their forgiveness is going forward. If you qualify, then your loan's forgiven. Now, there is a difference in tax treatment between the federal government and California. On some elements, generally, the federal government does not require you to recognize the debt forgiveness, the loan forgiveness as income, but they do allow you to take the expenditures on your taxes. And California, depending upon what loan it is not allowing both. So that becomes a sort of an issue. There are no more economic impact payments coming out to people, so that money is dried up. And one of the other things that has happened last year for 2020, the IRS and the federal government allowed a $10,200 offset against unemployment earnings from your unemployment income. And for 2021, all indications are that that's not going to be carried forward. So there are some changes in the landscape.
So that was going to be my next question. So with unemployment benefits, when are they taxable? When are they not?
Well, for federal tax purposes, they are taxable, subject to whatever exclusion the federal government may allow, like they did in 2020. But for California purposes, they are not taxable.
So I'd like to move on to the pandemic. That seems to be all we hear about of late. But are there major changes in tax law due to the pandemic?
Well, the Child Care or Child Credit Act is now allowing the federal government to and is directly paying parents money every month to help support their families. So that is a big change. It's allegedly getting a lot of families out of the poverty level, and children particularly. Other than that, there's not, I don't think, a lot of things that are happening right now that are different than what that has been going on. We're just waiting for what happens with the new legislation that's the Build Back Better Act and what things will stick through that have passed the House of Representatives and are now pending in the Senate.
Are we getting any word whether that's going to look the same coming out of the Senate, or a little early to be jumping on that?
I doubt that it's going to look the same. And this is just from listening to the news and reading the publications that I have. It's likely that the Senate will make some changes, and significant changes. And the Senate is also very evenly split. And there are, of course, a couple of senators who are fairly on the Democratic side who are not enthusiastic about passing the legislation as it came out of the House. So I imagine that it's going to change. And secondly, depending on how much resistance they find on the left side of the spectrum, it may not pass by Christmas as the Senate leaders have said it would.
Let me turn it over to Helga from Berkeley. Helga, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, hello. I hear that you have some realty experts there, and I have a question about the deed upon death. I have just lately heard about it, and I also was informed that there's apparently an expiration of turning this deed upon death in, and there must be some substantial tax advantages to that if I go ahead with that. And I would like to understand who I need to turn to so I can make that happen. Thank you.
I'm not sure I understand the question that you have. Has someone died and you're taking possession, sole possession of the property, or are you planning on adding someone to the property to plan for the idea that one or the other parties may die?
Yes, actually, I was thinking of my children, to put them onto the deed, but only in case of my death, that they will basically take over my deed. And I was wondering how to go about that, because from what I read, is there substantial tax advantages if I were to do this by the end of this year. It has to do with, I think, Proposition, is it 18, that has come into effect.
Okay, that's I think it's Prop 19, but I will tell, this is just my opinion, but I think it's a terrible idea to add children to the deed. You may save property taxes in the future, but in so doing, you will give up something called a stepped-up basis, and that can cost hundreds of thousands of dollars in capital gains tax should the child or children decide to sell the property upon the death of the parent. So I'm not crazy about the Prop 19, the encouragement via Prop 19 to add children to the deed. I don't think it's a very good idea. The child may save something in property taxes if one of them chooses to continue to live there. But still, over the long term, your basis or your cost becomes their cost, and when they sell it, they have a huge gain. And I'm not, to Frank, put it diplomatically, not enthusiastic about that prospect.
Frank, can I jump in for a moment just to break that down a little bit for listeners that might not be as sophisticated? When you talk about a step up in basis, you're talking about if you put them on the deed today, the law is going to treat them much as though they took title with you or took title sometime, took title now, as opposed to treating it at the value at the time that they take over.
So that's correct.
So you have a huge capital gain. So what you save in property taxes, which in the scheme of things over time is fairly small compared to the capital gain, you're saving pennies and throwing out dollars.
That is correct. That is correct. So to put it just at to illustrate this with simple numbers, let's say you paid $100,000 for a house 40 years ago, and you add your child's name to that deed. Well, your $100,000 cost or basis becomes their $100,000 cost or basis. If they sell the home upon the death of the parent and the house is worth $1,500,000, they will have a $1,400,000 gain. Conversely, if they are simply left the property via a revocable living trust or something like that, when they inherit the property, if the property is worth $1,500,000, their basis or cost will be $1,500,000, and the gain on that on a sale would be zero. So you are right. You're giving up, you're saving pennies on property tax, and you're spending potentially thousands in capital gains tax. That's both on the federal and the state level. Now, having said that, the pending legislation, and David, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, the pending legislation in Congress may do away with stepped up basis. So things could change. I don't know that that's true. I'm speculating there.
Yeah, it's not in the current bills, but anything is possible between now and if they enact something.
Okay. While Helga is still with us, can you give her an idea how she might accomplish some of those results with a trust?
Well, she can, in executing a revocable living trust and in conjunction with a state plan, she can leave the property to her children. She can leave it to them. They can choose to live there, or she can direct the trustee, which I'm assuming will be one or more of the children, to sell the property upon her death and divide the proceeds. But that's there's a lot of things that can be done, but those are two of the alternatives.
Yeah, I think this deed on death is really an alternative to either having a probate or doing a living trust. But as Frank has pointed out, the tax consequences may be substantially different. With a deed on death, though, they don't really get titled until the person dies. But there are still issues with those documents, and the program is currently up and just been renewed, but it's not something that is a permanent program at this point.
Helga, I hope that was helpful for you. Is there anything further you wanted to follow up before we move on?
No, I greatly appreciate this advice. It actually saves me a lot of stress at the end of the year. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights.
Bye-bye.
So Helga brought up a good point, and this brings us to the next area I wanted to talk about. We have roughly a month left to work with. Give us an idea of some of the things that we want to be doing between now and the end of the year.
Well, I think there's several things that people can be doing. One of them is if they have a 401k where they work and they have not taken out the maximum contribution that they can afford, then they may want to consider increasing that and doing it for their last paychecks of the year so that they maximized it. I think the total this year is $19,500 for an individual. So it's something that they could do. You can also look at charitable deductions. Even if you do not itemize your deductions, you are allowed to take, if for a single person, $300 on page one of the return, which means it's above the line, which means you get the deduction regardless of whether you've itemized or not. And it's $600 for a married couple. So if you haven't given that much, you might, and you're charitably inclined, you might want to do that to make sure you get that deduction. If you itemize deductions and you've had a lot of medical expenses this year, and you think you're over 7.5% of what's called your adjusted gross income, which is the number that's calculated after you put in all your income and take off the deductions other than itemized deductions, then it may make sense to pay more medical expenses so that you're sure to get a deduction this year where you may not get it next year if you don't itemize. We always tell you to get your records in order so that you really have a good sense of where you stand, and if you're having a professional, or even if you do it yourself, your returns, that you have it all organized, and it makes it much easier to get it done timely. And depending on what happens with this Build Back Better Act, the proposal that came out of the House of Representatives included increasing the $10,000 limit on what they call SALT, which is state and local taxes, which is basically your state income tax withholding and your property taxes, and also your DMV fees that are related to taxes. Those items are limited now to $10,000, but the House bill increases that limit to $80,000. So if that does pass in a final bill before the end of the year, it might make sense then to prepay your, if you make estimated tax payments, to prepay the fourth quarter California estimate before the end of the year. And if you live in another state, to prepay those states. If you also have a second installment of property taxes that may be due, you may want to prepay those. And that would then help for your itemization.
What one caveat there is, we're assuming there that the tax law would be retroactive to this year. If it's not, then
right, then it doesn't do any
prepaying
good.
Wouldn't help.
Right.
So if David, go ahead.
They are talking about it making retroactive. The House bill would make it retroactive to January 1 of this year, 2021. But who knows what would come out of the Senate?
If you were a gambler, would you bank on it passing?
Well, it's hard to say. It's popular in the coastal states where there's high taxes. People in the middle of the country don't care so much because they're the $10,000 doesn't mean a lot to them, and most of them don't itemize anyway. So it's hard to say.
Also, the other thing to consider is that in most cases, at least in my experience, the state and local tax deduction was an alternative. An alternative minimum tax preference item. So if you deducted it and you were subject to the alternative minimum tax, you weren't saving very much. It was almost a dollar for dollar offset.
Right.
So it's not an easy calculation to make, and it's not an easy decision to make, especially depending on what the new tax law says. If the AMT thresholds come down, the alternative minimum tax thresholds come down, you might be in exactly the same boat as you are right now.
Yeah, it's something you're going to need to work with a tax preparer on at the end of the year if this all comes to fruition.
What other changes might be coming from the Build Back Better Act if it remains in the format it's been going through the House?
They're talking about increasing the highest tax rates. Talking about increasing the current capital gains rate from the max 20 right now to at least 25%. I don't know if it'll go higher.
That wasn't in the House bill, but it could end up coming through the Senate. The higher rates would be for people with $10 million of income. The way it passed the House, they would have a 5% surtax added on. And if your income is over $25 million, it would be at 5% plus another 3%. But then also if you're somehow involved with an estate or trust, they're talking about those same percentages for $200,000 of income for an estate or trust at the extra 5% and the 3% total of 8% on income of over $500,000 for an estate or trust. So that's fairly substantial tax increases for those types of entities.
And that begs the real question, where the rubber meets the road. What should we do about some of these things that may be coming down the pipeline? I don't know how many of us listening would be in those really high tax brackets, but what about those of us that might be in the middle somewhere? Should we all go out and buy bigger houses, or Is it time to really start liquidating stuff? What should we be doing?
I don't think a tax tail should wag the business dog. Buying a house just so you can take the interest deduction doesn't always make sense. And right now, the interest deduction is limited to a $750,000 mortgage. So buying a bigger house is not necessarily going to save you in taxes. It will cost you in property taxes, certainly. It's very difficult to do planning when a bill hasn't passed and you've got, at this point, 4 weeks to go. It's going to be very difficult for people to plan. And I really suspect that the income thresholds that they talk about as they with regard to how they define the wealthy is going to be very subjective, and it's probably going to hit lower people in incomes lower than in the millions. That's my guess.
Yeah, I mean, the president said he didn't want to have any extra taxes on people making less than $400,000 a year, and so far the House bill has maintained that. And given what Senators Manchin and Sinema have said about no tax increases, presumably that would stick with the Senate, but we just don't know. Although there is one element of the House bill that they expanded the coverage of the net investment income tax to cover all income, not just investment income. So that may have an impact on people. But again, whether those people are under the $400,000 limit or income are defined out of that, we don't know yet.
And what of the estate tax exemption? Is that going to be rewritten?
Well, so that's not in the House bill. It's possible. It will sunset at the end of 2025 and basically be cut in half, whatever the level is then. Although I'm somewhat skeptical and don't think that they will let that happen, because it's not gone down before, except in what happened in 2010 when they let the state tax essentially lapse for a year. And that's when the Steinbrenner children got the Yankees for no estate tax. The following year, they went back and said that they would, as an alternative, because they didn't, the Yankees didn't get a stepped up basis for the Steinbrenners, but they said that we will put in a $5 million exclusion for 2010 and allow you to have a stepped up basis. So thinking is that probably the exclusion won't go down, but it's possible it will. But that's not it's not covered by the current version of the House bill.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in the San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight we're handing out tips to perhaps save you on your taxes as 2021 is soon coming to a close. My guests are both CPAs as well as attorneys, Frank Adam and David Hellman. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside the Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. Tonight, we're talking about your taxes as the year is coming to a close. You're not limited to the point we may be in our conversation. Let me turn it to Adrian from Oakland. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks. We recently bought a house, and the house is now being taxed at the purchase price, even though we all know that the market is insane, and the house went up from the original tax that the previous owners had paid. It's going to, it might double. And I am wondering, do we have any chance to make appeal with Alameda County, or would we be better off selling this to our business and then, like, leasing the house from our business, or would that set us up with too much capital gains?
Well, I don't think there's anything you're going to be able to do about the tax that's going to be assessed or reassessed based on the purchase price of the home. There is an appeals process available in most counties, but that can cost you money to accomplish. if the assessment is accurate vis-a-vis the market value of the home, you're not likely to prevail on that appeal. If you sell the property to your own business, you've created a couple of issues. One, there's going to be a transfer tax on the property, probably. Secondly, if you're a business, if you're selling the home to your business and leasing it back, you have a related parties transaction issue. So you better make sure that the transaction between your business and yourself is at arm's length and is at market value. So I'm not sure that's a great idea. People that buy properties in the market like this one, where people are paying up to 50%, sometimes more, over the list price, are running the risk of having to pay these very, very high property taxes. And the more that people do that, the higher the market goes and the less chance you're going to have on appeal to claim that the assessed value is too high.
Yeah, because the assessed value is just based off of the purchase price. It's not as though they actually assess the property.
That's correct. But remember that the market is based on what people are willing to pay for certain properties. Just by way of example, I represented a client not long ago where there was a modest home in the Bay Area, and someone paid well over 50% over list for the property. Now, I look at that objectively and think that's not a very good decision, but that's what someone's willing to pay. And that makes it very difficult for others to claim that their property has been overvalued with regard to a property tax assessment.
Right. If you pay the price, I mean, what you paid is market value because you decided you were willing to pay it. So
exactly.
The likelihood of prevailing is not good.
Okay.
Adrian, I hope that worked out. I hope that worked out. I hope that helped you out. And thank you for joining
us. Well, that's an answer. Thanks for taking the time.
Sorry, it's not the answer we hoped for.
I do have one input for you vis-a-vis the business.
Okay.
Do you use now a home office deduction?
I believe he is. My husband works from home, and yes, I think he is doing that.
As an employee or as a self-employed person?
That's a good question, because I fired myself from doing the taxes several years ago, and I've been never so happy to lose a job.
Well, I can say if he's using a home office as an employee, that doesn't help from a tax standpoint, because employee business expenses are no longer deductible. If you're self-employed and you have a home office wherein the home office is used regularly and exclusively for the business, that can be a material tax deduction. I've had a home office for over 30 years. And as long as you're careful about it and you document it and you're prudent in the amounts that you deduct, you should be fine. But that requires some careful planning and accurate accounting and record keeping.
Okay. Good. Yes. Good to know. I know he's doing well. He works with an accountant, so whatever records they've told him to keep, he's keeping. But we do need to find someone in California because we're new to the state.
Adrian, I hope this has been helpful, and thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights.
Thank you very much.
At Your Legal Rights, December looks to be an amazing month. Here are some of the interesting programs we're working on right now. Next week, on December 8th, it's been almost 20 years since Lacey Peterson disappeared on a Christmas Eve. A fresh look at the Scott Peterson case, how it all unfolded, and what might be next. That's next week on December 8th. On December 15th, we are taking up landlord-tenant issues. On December 22nd, the year started with the January 6th attack on the Capitol and racially inspired violence, and is now ending with brazen thefts by flash mobs infiltrating the holiday shopping season. Are these all mere lawlessness, or are these signs of a tearing of the social fabric? That's December 22nd. Best of all, we'll take your calls and answer your questions. That's Your Legal Rights, Wednesday night at 6 o'clock on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area, or KALW.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
Aurora from San Francisco, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
I have a question. We own a house that we have that we're renting, and we can afford to pay off the balance of the house. And our plan is to buy a house that we will move into in the new year. So my question is this a good idea to pay it off, the house, before we buy the other house? Or should we put that money towards the new house?
You've got a couple of issues. One is if you need a mortgage to buy a new house, then you need to talk to a mortgage broker to find out whether they think the lender, potential lenders, would want you to have that loan paid off on the existing rental property or not. So I think that's one place I would check. Mm-hmm. Generally, what I tell clients is that if you're paying mortgage interest at the rate of 4%, and you're only making 2% at the bank, then economically it makes sense to pay off the loan because then you're that 2% ahead. So those are things to look at.
I see. Well, the first part of the answer is to talk to the lender.
Right. First step is to talk to a potential lender or mortgage broker to find out whether they would want you to have that loan paid off or not.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they also put on conditions that they want all your credit card debt paid off or things like that. So you need to find out what kind of requirements a lender may put on you.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you very much. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. Let me turn it to Toshi from San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, I have a question. As new sole proprietor, if I get a grant, let's say $100,000 or $200,000, how much taxes do I have to pay on that?
Well, what's the grant for?
Well, it would be for a new, for a new business.
Is it a federal or federally sponsored grant through the
It's federal.
Coming from the Small Business Administration?
Yeah.
You need to look at the terms of that grant, and they will tell you whether or not it's taxable income or not. Most of those grants are in that size, and currently there were some that were coming through before that were not, but you need to check the terms on that grant.
Okay, so it's on the terms, okay, because I had someone help fill it out, and I was
The promotional material about it should explain whether it's going to be taxable income to you or not.
Got it. Okay.
David, will the nature of the business have an effect on whether perhaps it's an area that the government is trying to jumpstart, maybe give a break as opposed to another?
Right. Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, so I just need to read the fine print. If it's a personal grant, like if... I know someone who, and so they were like, they were just getting a personal grant to help them with their, to get with their finances and whatnot. And so they were wondering, is that also considered income?
Well, again, it depends on the type of grant, but generally those are not, but it's possible that they are. You know, it's, some counties will give people support grants to help them with their rent or their utility payments, and those generally are not going to be considered income.
Got it. Okay. Got it. Yes. Okay. That is a huge thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, because that's a friend of mine that's been calling and asking, and I heard you guys online, so, or on the radio. Thank you for that information.
Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights.
Bye.
Let's turn it to Mac in Berkeley. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Much better, thanks. How are you?
Doing well. I'm calling because I have an elderly aunt that wants to gift me a property, and I don't want to live in the house. I'd rather sell it as quickly as possible, and I'd like to know the best way to accomplish that.
Well, she should not gift you the property. She should leave the property to you as an inheritance in some form. But if she gifts you the property, you're going to have a huge tax bill if you sell it.
Now, you take over her income tax basis as the donee, and as opposed to inheriting it, where you'd get a new fair market value and then would not have any capital gain if you sold it.
I see.
So if the house is worth $500,000 and she paid $100,000 and that's her basis, and then she gave it to you, your basis would be $100,000. You sold it for $500,000, you would have a $400,000 gain to pay tax on. Whereas if she died and the house was worth $500,000 and you got that and its basis then became $500,000, you sold it, you don't have any gain.
I see.
And the inheritance is subject to a cap, and presumably this would be under the cap?
Presumably, yeah, it would be within the federal exclusion. But that's not going to, that doesn't cap the basis increase to fair market value at death.
Okay, very good. Would there be some, well, no, I think I've asked the right question. I thank you for your time, and I'll listen again next week. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. So let's shift gears a little bit. One of the things that I've noticed are that investments in things like the stock market, up until the last week or so, the stock market's been up maybe 20% in the last year. And yet most of us find that ordinary income is not going up so fast. What can somebody do to protect more of that income from taxation, or maybe be able to get to some of the money now without paying a huge penalty?
I'm not sure I understand, Jeff. With regard, you're saying, how do they increase their ordinary income without paying tax?
How could you adjust to where your income is meeting some of the increased expenses? Our investments are doing great with inflation, but if income is stagnant and prices are going up, what can you do to buffer against some of that?
Well, very little, in my opinion. If you're taking money from a retirement account, assuming you can do that without a penalty, you'll pay tax on that income. If you simply have a brokerage account and you sell the investment, you'll pay a capital gains tax on whatever investment you sell. That might help you with expenses, but I know that it's necessarily going to help someone with a tax with taxes, unless they're able to offset the gain from a sale of a particular security with a loss on a security that they don't expect to raise in value, and that one would offset the other.
And given what's happened the last few days, those two things may equalize more rapidly than we would like to think. Let me turn it to Kathy in San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hello.
Hi. You're on the air, Kathy.
Okay. I had a question about changing a regular IRA into a Roth IRA because this year there's practically no income, and next year there probably will be.
Well, you can do it. There's also the potential that this new tax legislation may limit or eliminate the ability to convert from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA. So it may be good timing to get it done before December 31st of this year. But what it is that to the extent you do make that conversion, the amount of the IRA that you convert to a Roth is going to be taxable income to you, like any retirement plan payment.
Yes, and I've already, it's a required withdrawal, but I've already taken out in January what was required, so it would be good, if the tax would be fine to take this year. Is there any rules about how much I could convert the IRA into a Roth this year?
You want to talk about that, Frank?
No, go ahead, David.
Yeah, I mean, no, there's no general limits. I mean, at this point for conversion, there are limits on how much you can put into a Roth IRA straight out, which is the same as the IRA limits. But the conversion, there isn't that I'm aware of.
If Kathy wanted to, could she separately maintain both a Roth and a conventional IRA?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, like now, that's what I have. Some of it is already in a Roth, and some of it is in a regular. So good. Good to hear that.
Excellent. Kathy, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. I hope that was the answer you were looking for.
Yes, it was. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We talked a little bit last year about virtual currency transactions. It seems in the last year that general knowledge on the issue of virtual currency, whether it's Bitcoin or Dogecoin or one of the others, seems a bit more sophisticated. How much is the IRS getting more sophisticated with those?
Well, you do have to state on the face of the return whether or not you own any virtual currency. So I think that actually happened last year. And the same disclosure has to be made on the current year's 1040. So people should make sure they do that. And if you're selling virtual currency, it's treated like any other securities transaction. You have a basis, you have a sale price, and you have a gain or loss. Probably a gain, given the values of virtual currency these days.
Yeah, and the IRS is starting to try and collect data on the transactions and essentially require the same forms that you would for any securities transaction. A little difficult if the transaction is not in the United States, but you still have the legal obligation to make the required disclosure and reporting on your tax returns.
Are they going to find it?
Well, they're getting to find it because the IRS is starting to look at companies that manage these sales, and they're auditing them or having them disclose who their customers are and their amounts. So, yeah, they're going to find it. And now an issue also that comes up is that if you use Bitcoin to pay for something, so if you go to the corner store and you buy a coffee and you use Bitcoins to pay for it, well, you've sold Bitcoins for the price of that coffee and you have to report it. If you take the Bitcoins and you pay a vendor for your business, well, then you have two different transactions. One is you have the sale of the Bitcoin equal to the value of what the vendor charged you. And the second is then you get a tax deduction on your business for what you paid the vendor. And you may have the obligation to provide a 1099 to that vendor for the payment. So people need to be aware that this is, it's different than just using cash and currency, because you're converting the cryptocurrency to cash, essentially, is the way the government looks at it. And then you're making the payment. So it's a two-step transaction for people using it in a business.
Let's turn to Mark in San Francisco. Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I paid my income taxes for last year, and I collected some of my income was unemployment compensation. So I paid the taxes based on the usual assumption that unemployment is fully taxable. And then they went and they changed it, and they made the first $20,000 or whatever tax exempt.
Is that a question?
I'm not quite sure I understood it, Mark. Can you clarify that a little bit?
Okay. I paid my income taxes last year, and included my income was unemployment compensation. So that's taxable, right?
For federal taxes, yes, not California. And they did have a $10,200 exclusion from reporting that amount or paying tax on it. You had to report the whole amount for an individual, and $20,400 for a married couple if it's community property that was the unemployment compensation was deemed community. So,
correct. Yes, I understand that, but I did my taxes and I paid it before the $10,000.
Right, so they should send you a refund. The government is going to automatically recalculate your return and send you a refund.
Well, yeah, I heard some guidance that it would be done like in May, and then it would be later and later, and it still hasn't happened. Do you, have you heard when this might be processed?
Well, you can call the IRS and ask. They tell you not to file an amended return to cover this, but that would be an alternative if they don't send you the money back. But I would call the IRS first to see what their status is on doing those calculations.
Okay, well, good luck on getting through them. But okay, I will try that. Thank you for your help.
Thank you for joining us, Mark. David, have you heard, is the IRS closer to being fully staffed once again? It seemed that early in the pandemic, they were emptied out like many other businesses in the nation.
Yeah, there's still a lot of them working from home. And it's made it very difficult because when you mail them something, they then rely on an outside service to come to their office and scan that outside mail and then send it off to an agent. And so that adds time and complexity to getting an answer. Hopefully they will all be able to work in office soon. They are also trying to staff up. That's part of what's coming through on the use of this Build Back Better funding, is to provide additional funds for the Internal Revenue Service.
We were talking a little bit about a Roth IRA as opposed to a traditional IRA. What's a SEP IRA? What's a self-directed IRA? Where do those fit in the mix?
Well, a SEP IRA is a simplified plan for self-employed people, and the deduction limits are a bit higher. A SEP IRA has to be established, I believe, by the due date of an extended return, and the self-employed person can take a deduction if they make the contribution to the SEP IRA by the appropriate deadline. But it differs from a regular IRA in that a regular IRA is not necessarily based on your income. There's a $7,000 limit to IRA contributions, whereas a SEP IRA, I think the max goes up to $55,000 or so. But that's really for people that are self-employed or have their own business.
But as a self-employed person with a SEP IRA, do I have to include my employees in the, if I were to put money in my SEP, do I have to put money in an IRA for them?
Yeah, the simple answer to that is yes. You can't discriminate against lower paid employees. Yeah.
Is it proportionate to their salary? Do I have to put a like amount in? How do they determine that?
Well, the best way to determine that is to hire someone who will help you administer the plan, and they can point out to you how much you have to pay your lower level employees.
And generally, it would be the same percentage that you're paying yourself.
So if I gave myself if I decided to contribute 10% of my income to my SEP, I should probably be putting 10% of the employees' salaries into their retirement plan as well.
That's generally the way it works.
Yeah, but I don't recommend people do this on their own. There are lots of competent firms out there that will help them set up the plan and make sure that the contributions are done on time.
Yeah. Now, you also asked about self-directed. Now, that's a regular IRA or Roth IRA where the custodian does not make the investment decisions, but the plan participant makes those decisions. So you need to find a custodian that is willing to allow that to occur.
Yes, and if they do that, if they do, if a self-directed IRA, if the participant engages in what's called a prohibited transaction, they're going to pay some tax and some penalty.
So is this the time of year that I should be thinking about whether I should be 1099-ing various folks? And how do I draw the line? Do I 1099 my housekeeper, my gardener?
Well, only if you have a home business and it's related to the home business. The gardener might be the home housekeeper. Well, takes care of your office, yes. But generally, you do not have to issue 1099s for personal items in your household unless it's part of your business as a personal item, and you don't have to do that. But if you have a rental property, then you're supposed to issue the 1099s to whatever vendors work on the rental property with the $600 minimum.
Also, there's a different 1099 for independent contractors as opposed to other forms of payments. So yeah, it's a 1099 NEC, non-employee compensation, and then the other 1099s are for rental income, interest, et cetera.
You know, some of the things we touched on a little bit, but I want to go through a quick laundry list in the little bit of time we have left about some of the things that we used to do fairly routinely to see if it still makes sense. One of them is to prepay state taxes. Does it still make sense to do that?
We talked about that earlier. It depends on whether or not the limitation is going to be raised. If it is and it's retroactive, it will. If it's not going to be raised and it's not retroactive, then it's it may turn into a timing issue or no issue at all. Also, yeah, a person cannot take a deduction for a tax that has not yet been assessed. So let's assume that the SALT deduction is raised and it's retroactive to this year. You don't want to pay the 2022, 2023 taxes because they haven't been assessed yet and you can't deduct them.
Right. And it also depends, too, whether you can itemize. If paying the extra tax is not going to kick you up to being able to itemize, then it doesn't make sense to prepay it.
Looks like we have one more caller. Alice from Berkeley, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you. My father died recently, and he was on my deed, and I want to know, what do I have to do to increase, so I don't have to? What do I have to do, nuts and bolts-wise,
with the assessor's office? Most importantly, Alice, our condolences. Sorry to hear that he has passed.
Oh, thank you. He was really old, so he had a great life.
There are several forms you're going to have to file with the county. I'm assuming this was this a joint tenancy or a tenancy in common deed?
It was. He had 50% of the house, and my husband and I had the other 50%, and he left his 50% to me.
Okay, well, there are a number of forms you have to file with the county recorder to establish the fact that, one, that he has passed away, that, two, you're the surviving co-tenant. So check with your county recorder to find out what they want. I recently did this, and it was a total of four separate forms, and including a certified copy of the death certificate. So make a call and find out what they're looking for.
Okay, and I call the county assessor's office, or who do I call?
Well, you may need to talk to the assessor as well. So start with the recorder's office, tell them what's happened, and you may need to speak with the assessor as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Alice, thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights. There's about 2 minutes for each of you left if you'd like to take a couple minutes for any closing thoughts, comments, anything you'd like to say.
Well, initially, I would say if you're in one of these strategies that we had talked about earlier, possibly doing before the end of the year, then you're going to need to pay close attention to what, if and when, the Build Back Better Act passes, and then get some professional help probably in terms of what you can do to sort of help minimize your 2021 taxes. So that's one thing. The other is that there are things that we did also outline about what you can be doing now to help move things along. And I would suggest working on those now, and including getting your records together, but also things like maximizing your 401k, possibly doing a charitable contribution. If you're not going to be able to itemize, do some anyway, just to get some deductions on your return, things like that. So those are things that I would suggest people should be working on and work at.
Also, I think it's to accentuate David's point, preparation is going to be critical, because this thing is supposedly going to pass by Christmas Day, which leaves the public with a grand total of 6 days to do last-minute planning. That's not very much time at all. So in my opinion, I hope the silly thing doesn't pass this year and goes into next year, so at least people have time to structure their affairs and plan for the next tax year. But assuming it does pass, it's going to be a very tight schedule.
So plan today and execute tomorrow.
Yeah, very quickly tomorrow. If it passes, you're not going to have a lot of time to do whatever you need or want to do.
And that'll be the last word on the topic, 6 days to plan. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight we've been discussing taxes, what you can do now, and what to do as the year comes to a close, especially in these times where the laws are changing. We don't know exactly what they're going to look like in as little as 3 weeks, with a week left till the end of the year. Our guests tonight have been David Hellman of San Rafael. David is a certified tax law specialist by the California Board of Legal Specialization, State Bar of California, as well as a certified public accountant and a longtime supporter of Your Legal Rights. And Frank Adam of Pacifica, a great supporter of both Your Legal Rights and our Call a Lawyer Night feature. Frank is also a certified public accountant, an attorney, and a real estate broker. Tonight's show was produced by yours truly. It's been almost 20 years since Lacey Peterson disappeared on a slow news night on a Christmas Eve. Next week on Your Legal Rights, we take a fresh look at the Scott Peterson case, how it all unfolded, and what might be next. Best of all, we take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guests, Frank Adam and David Hellman. And on behalf of Your Legal Rights, a big thanks of all to you for listening. And at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
On the next Open Air, you'll hear from Ebenezer Scrooge himself in the person of actor Francois Baptiste, along with The Ghost of Christmas Past, stars of A Christmas Carol at the Golden Gate Theater, plus a new holiday show, The Magic Lamp at Presidio Theater, the return of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, and The Nutcracker at SF Ballet. I'm David LaTulipe. I'm back. Join me Thursday afternoon at 1 for Open Air, the Sleigh Bell Edition.